Ladies and gentlemen, good morning to you. Please welcome retired Air Force Colonel Laverne Griffin. Griff has 6,000 Air Force pilot hours, another 3,000 as a civilian. He received the FAA's most prestigious award, which is the Wright Brothers Award, for 50 years of accident-free flying. That's something right there. 24 years active service?
28.
And your wings in 19?
48.
In 48.
1948.
So at what point did you start reconnaissance flying, and how do you train to do reconnaissance flying?
Well, I started in 1948 after I graduated from P-51 flying school at Williams Field, Arizona. Went to March Field and flew the first RF-80 jets.
Right.
When I was 19 years old, I was flying those. And that's how I got started in reconnaissance. I liked it because instead of going to a gunnery range every day, you might go 300-400 miles, take some pictures, and come back, and that was a little more fun than just going around the local area. So I enjoyed my reconnaissance career.
So how long do you have to train to learn to be a reconnaissance pilot?
Well, it doesn't take a lot of training. You pull a few switches. You got to make sure you're over the target. It's the main thing about a reconnaissance pilot, he's got to be pretty good at navigation because you're out there by yourself. And in those days, of course, we didn't have GPS and VOR and all that. You just had a map and a compass. And it takes a little more skill to do that, I think. You know.
So when you were training for that in California, what kind of missions, to call them missions, training missions, would you do?
For example, we'd fly up to the Boulder Dam, and then we had a camera in the nose of the aircraft. We'd dive right down at the dam, take a picture of that. And then maybe we would take mosaics to make maps of, where you have to fly flight lines over the ground so far apart to make a map with cameras that pointed straight down, vertical cameras. And dams and other airfields and things like that, we would get pictures of. And
so you were an early expert on Boulder Dam?
Well, I wouldn't say I was an expert, but I did take a picture of it when it was Boulder Dam.
What is the film? How does that all work? What does it look like, and how does it work?
The film is 9 inches wide and comes in rolls of 200, 300, 400 feet. I don't know. It's endless. And it takes a 9 by 9 inch photograph. So the film is 9 by 9 inches. That's pretty good size. And then you make your prints off of the film.
Right. Now, when did you go to Korea?
I went to Korea in 1953.
And you were part of a reconnaissance unit? Is that right?
Yes, I was.
Mm-hmm. And how many pilots are there in a unit?
Well, there was about 25 pilots in that unit. 15th Tactical Reconnaissance Squadron, and flying out of Kimpo Aerodrome near Seoul, which is the international airport there now, I think.
You flew 3 missions over Russia. Describe those missions, would you?
Okay, but before I flew those missions, the war was on, and I flew missions over China or Manchuria during the war. Those were top secret missions. Then after the war was over on the 27th of July, which was exactly 65 years ago today, I flew my last mission over Manchuria. And then we moved to Japan and got a newer model F-86 airplane. And I started flying missions there in March of 1954, the three overflight missions of the Soviet Union.
When you were flying over China, however, were you ever apprehended by Chinese aircraft or Russian aircraft?
No, never were. We were always pretty high, 47,000 feet or something like that, and moving pretty fast, so it'd been pretty hard to get to us.
So the missions over Russia, now that, you know, we saw about the Dulein and so on, and about RB-47s over Russia, but here you were on F-86s. And what were the route? Tell me the routine that you would go through before you could get to Russia.
before we could get to Russia. Well, we trained to see how much range we could get out of these airplanes. And then we knew where we had to base out of to fly over the Vladivostok area, where most of the airfields were, that could have possibly been had airplanes, TU-4s, a copy of our B-29 that could carry a nuclear bomb. We weren't sure they could carry a nuclear bomb, and that's why we went there, because President Eisenhower said that we were going to do this because we needed to know. He didn't want to be surprised like we were at Pearl Harbor. So he said, we're going to get those, we're going to find out if they've got this capability or not. And he laid it on down through the line, and it ended up with me and my pilots doing, flying these missions.
So how was Japan involved in this process of this route that you took?
Well, Japan was our base at Komaki, Nagoya, Japan. And that's where we operated out of. But we had to go to Korea to refuel in order to make this mission.
And so the route would be, you would leave, what, one day?
We would leave Komaki Aerodrome in Nagoya, fly over to Osan, Korea. K-55 was the name of the base, for those who remember those bases. And had a long runway, and we'd stay overnight, and then the next morning we took off on our mission.
Did anybody else in those bases know who you were and what you were doing?
No. It was top secret. We put the airplanes in the hangar and refueled them in the hangars and locked the doors and taxied out without radios or anything in the morning, just a green light from the tower for a go. And it was radio silence all the way, unless there was an emergency.
And how many aircraft would go with you? If you're in the lead, how many
would
you?
Well, I had six airplanes, but there were two spares. And after we got out over the Sea of Japan, the spare dropped our external fuel tanks, and everybody's dropped okay. Then the spares went back to Nagoya, and four of us proceeded towards Vladivostok area.
So the reason to drop the tanks in the water was what? To keep them, so if they were picked up, you weren't identified, it was part of the secrecy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it said made in Cleveland on the tanks. You wouldn't want to be dropping those over Russia, but
right.
We dropped them when they were empty, you know, and
yeah.
We were way out over the Sea of Japan, so we were a long way from shore.
And when you were training to find out what kind of range you had, what kind of range did you have?
Well, we had about 1,400 miles of range, I would say. So this was within our capability.
Right. And how long in terms of time were these missions?
About 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Right.
We were moving right along. We were moving at 9/10 the speed of sound, Mach 0.9. So we weren't wasting any time.
In altitude?
That'd be about 517 miles an hour.
Right.
517 knots, excuse me.
Right.
Altitude to 42,000 feet.
Describe each of these missions, the very first one. What were you photographing and why?
The very first one, we were photographing these airfields to find out if these bombers had a nuclear capability. And I think that airplane's going over.
yeah, we're good. Go ahead. I think they can hear fine.
Okay. So it was a little trepidation on the first mission. You know, we weren't sure the radar couldn't pick us up, and we weren't sure about a lot of things, and we had to have a story if we were caught, a cover story. The cover story was that we were lost, and that seemed satisfy me when I was 24 years old, but right now it sounds a little weak. But we had our poopy suits. These are exposure suits that are guaranteed to keep you alive for 30 more minutes if you go down in cold water and wearing all this junk. And of course, the brass is very concerned about these missions because, you know, what are they going to say if we get shot down? Like was later happened. But anyhow, we proceeded on this first mission, and They try to predict whether there's going to be contrails or not, because it has to be about 40 below zero and so much humidity to form a contrail, but they predicted there wouldn't be. So when we got to 10 minutes south of Vladivostok, we split up into elements, two airplanes. I'm leading the flight, but my two airplanes, we go one way and the other two guys go another, and about 10 minutes later, I heard a call that said, Alabama. Well, Alabama was a code word for you're pulling contrails. So I looked over at my wingman, because we were not in the same area, of course, by this time, and he wasn't pulling contrails, so I knew I wasn't pulling contrails, so we continued on our mission. The other two airplanes aborted and went to northern Japan to recover. And we went on and got our pictures. And then we landed in Misawa, northern Japan, and we were met by all the brass in the Far East, I think, in a C-47 that grabbed the film right away. And the photo interpreters looked at it and decided that those airplanes were not capable of carrying a nuclear weapon, which made President Eisenhower breathe a sigh of relief. And
do you know how they were able to determine that?
No, you'll have to tell me, because I couldn't tell by looking. I've got the photos in here, and right, you may see some on the board up there, but I couldn't tell, but that's what they said.
Wow.
So the photo interpreters are pretty good.
Right. Now, that was mission number one.
That was mission number one.
Did any airplanes come up to apprehend you at all?
No.
Did you see any?
No, but let me tell you, after we got down to Tokyo to process the film, in the C-47, and they found out what they wanted to know. The four-star general was O.P. Weilen, the four-star general in charge of the 5th Air Force, called us into his office. We were still in our flying suits, and he had a desk about 6 foot long there, and he sat behind a desk, and we walked in and saluted, and he got up and said, "A good job, boys," and he pinned a Distinguished Flying Cross right on our flying suit. And he said, for any of you ever been in the military, he said, "I'll take care of the paperwork later." Well, that's pretty good, because it normally takes a couple of years of paperwork to process all these medals through. So then, you know, when I was 25 years old, I thought, well, he told us that because we got the pictures, but when I'm 80 years old, I think it's because we didn't create any international incidents.